Deuteronomy chapter 11. I have looked seven other times at this thought of the danger of assuming. I will not weary us with all that I've mentioned, other than to say this. I've talked about we can assume, or it's easy to assume, that planning means progress and promises means protection and prayer means promptness and profession means possession and position means purpose and performance means purity and people mean peace. And you probably don't remember any of that. But I do want to touch on this thought this morning. It's easy to assume, or we may wrongly assume, that providence means puppets. Now that may sound strange, but you shouldn't be shocked to hear strange things from me. Notice beginning in verse 26, chapter 11, verse 26, God says, "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse." Listen, a blessing if you obey the commandment of the Lord your God, which I command you this day. That's the first choice. Verse 28, the second choice. And a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Lord your God to turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods which you have not known. God says, I'm going to leave it up to you. I give you a choice. There are only two choices. There's only two forks in the road. One is a blessing. If you want a blessing, here's how you get it. Here's the only way you get it, like we said this morning. Trust and obey. The other choice, if you want it, you can get it, a curse. And the way you get that curse is simply by not obeying. Sometimes people will say that God is a sovereign God, and He is, but that does not mean He does not give us the right and the ability to choose what we're going to do. In these verses, we find that God says it's up to you. So I say this morning, we could easily assume that providence, that means God's sovereign, that means the work of God, means that we are puppets in the hand of God and He's pulling the strings and we have no will or no right or no ability to choose anything. We are not puppets. God gives us a choice. He gave Lucifer a choice. He gave the angels that rejected the Lord, that followed Lucifer, a choice. He gave all angels a choice, by the way. And He has given us a choice. God says, I don't want you to be a puppet. God can make robots to do His will. He could have made robots that had no will of their own, that blindly, unemotionally did His will, and things would be done a whole lot better than they have been done by us. But if you look through these verses in this chapter, you'll find that God talks about loving me. In fact, let's look at verse 1. Therefore thou shalt love the Lord thy God and keep His charge and His statutes. He says, I want you to do right, not because you have no choice, because you have to, because you're a puppet controlled by anything or anybody. I want you to love me and obey me because you want to. Verse 19 says, I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life that both thou and thy seed may live. He says, here's the choices, blessing or curse. I can analyze that and say this, your way or my way. Do it your way and it'll be a curse. Do it my way and you'll be blessed. I maybe could say it like this. God has sovereignly, since He's God, decided to let us choose some things about our lives. And we will suffer the consequences of our choices. Notice what it says in verse 19. Choose blessing or cursing. Therefore choose life that both thou and thy seed may live. When you decide, you've got to live with your decision. It's kind of like going to a skyscraper and going on the top of the building and standing there at the edge. Well, you decide whether to jump off or not. That's your choice. But once you decide to make that leap, that last step, boy, your choice is in. And you are overtaken with the results of your choice, which means you're going down in a hurry. The choice was yours to jump or not jump. When you chose to jump, the law of gravity took over, and your choice ended, and the results of your choice began. I look through these verses in this chapter, and I find some things where God lets us choose. Look in verse 18, if you will. I want you to follow with me this morning. Verse 18 says, therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. He says, I want you to keep my word in focus. I want them to be a frontlet in your eye. I want them to be always constantly on your mind and in your focus. I say this morning, God lets us decide about our focus. He says, if you want to be blessed, if you want a blessing, I'll tell you how to do it. You keep my word and my will and my way in your front, in your focus. You let it be the thing you think on all day long, and let it be your focus, and you will be blessed. What do you think about most of the day? What is your focus most of the day? We are so distracted by so many things, and now more than ever we have so many distractions. If I focus my attention on that chandelier, I not only all of a sudden have it in my mind and in my vision, but I not only am looking at it, I have all of a sudden lost consciousness of everything else around me. And God says, I want your focus to be me and my word and my will. Don't be distracted by the world. Don't be distracted by what's going on. Let me be your focus, but you have the choice to focus on me or something else. Here it is. It is your way or my way. It is a blessing or a curse. You want to stay focused on me, you'll get a blessing if you do. You don't want to stay focused on me, you'll get a curse instead. It's so important that our focus be right, because there's so many distractions. It doesn't have to be a terrible sin that draws us from the will of God. It could be anything in this world, anything in life. It could be a hobby or a pleasure or an entertainment, or it could be business, or it could be friends, or it could be music. Listen, anything that distracts us from God's will takes us away from His blessings. Our thoughts are so important, because our thoughts control us. One of the reasons we're sad or glad is because of our thoughts. One of the reasons why we're positive or negative is because what we're thinking about and what we're focused on. I suppose we all know somebody who has a spiritual attitude most of the time, and they're joyful and peaceful and contented, and it just seems like they're a joy to be around. But we also know somebody probably who is carnal and harsh and seem to be worried and fearful, and they're not such a pleasure to be around. What makes the difference? A lot of things, but one thing for sure, the positive person has their mind on the right things. And the person who isn't has their focus on something other than the things of God. God said, I'll let you choose. Which do you want? Want a blessing? Focus on me. Keep your mind on me. Throughout your day, throughout your life, throughout your whatever you're facing, keep your mind and your thoughts on me. That's why Paul said in Philippians 4:8, he listed long things about good things and perfect things and all that, and he ended by saying, think on these things. God lets us decide. We're not puppets being pulled by God's strings with no right and no reason and no ability to decide. He lets us decide. But when we decide, we live with the consequences of our decisions. We're the one that jumped off the roof if we decided to. God lets us decide about our focus. I believe these verses in this chapter tells us that God lets us decide about our faith. Look, beginning in verse 2. It says here, "And know ye this day, for I speak not of your children which have not known." I'm not speaking to somebody who doesn't know what I'm talking about. "And which have not seen." I'm not talking to somebody who hasn't seen what God's doing or doesn't know about what God's done. "Which have not seen the chastisement of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his stretched out arm, and his miracles and his acts which he did in the midst of Egypt, under Pharaoh the king of Egypt, and under all his land." And he goes on in these verses talking about what about God has done. And he says, "You saw it yourself." Look in verse 7. "But your eyes have seen all the great works of the Lord which he did." I'm not talking to a bunch of people who don't know God. I'm not talking to people who've never seen God work. You saw God work. You've seen it with your own eyes. You ought to believe. So I say, God lets us choose about our faith. If we want to believe God and determine to believe God with his help, it'll be a good thing. If we go on in lack of faith and doubt and fear and worry, it won't be a good thing. We find in the Bible several times, I found 63 times where it says, "Fear not." Now, I'll tell you something. Humanly speaking, we're living in a scary day. Looking at this crowd inside compared to the outside, it sort of grieves me. But I'm glad you're here wherever you're at. But the difference in our services, the difference in our church, the difference in our country, the difference in our world, the difference in our mentality and our thoughts is the fact that scary things are going on. So we decide, am I going to be overwhelmed with what's happening? Am I going to just give up on God and let it be defeating me every day? Am I going to worry and fret and live in fear? Or am I going to say, by God's help, I'm going to trust him. I am going to trust him. I am not somebody who's never seen God move. He has helped me in the past. He has done the miraculous. He has done it for me and for others I love. And if he did then, he can now. I choose by God's grace, with his help, to have faith. He says, you can have it your way if you want to, but you'll suffer the consequences. You'll be worried and fearful and fretful and powerless, or you can have it my way and say, I'm trusting God. I can depend on him. I can trust him no matter what. You see, faith brings us to God. You want to know why I pray? Sometimes, to be honest, it's because I'm so burdened. I feel like I got to get a hold of God. But even then, we pray because we believe God can hear and answer. We believe, that's faith. We believe he cares. We believe he can. We believe he's able. And that draws us to God. That's our faith. And if we don't believe God will answer prayer, we won't pray. But if we do, more than likely we will. Faith brings us to him and helps us to get help from him. And if we believe God, we'll pray. If we believe God, we'll read. If we believe God, we'll be faithful to church. If we believe God, we'll witness because we know he's going to use us. Here's what Paul said. We both labor and suffer reproach because we trust in the living God. He says we labor. That means serving God. Why were they serving God instead of still fishing or collecting taxes or going about their old life? They were doing what they were doing because they trusted God. They were laboring for the Lord because they believed God. And we do the same if we serve God. We labor for him by faith, believing God's going to use me. God has a will for my life. God has a work he wants me to do. I can be his vessel. I can be his tool. By faith, we labor. We trust God. But he also says by both labor and suffer reproach. We suffer what we go through by faith. Knowing that God still loves us, knowing that God hasn't lost control, knowing that God has a will and a way in our lives, and sometimes suffering is the way he does what he wants us to do, and knowing and believing that he is going to help me in my trouble by faith, he lets us choose. We're not puppets on God's strings. Even though there'll be things he surely works in our lives to move and to make us and get us where we're willing to. There's no doubt about that. There's a struggle between him and our will all the time. But God lets us choose. He lets us decide. He says, would you want a blessing or a curse? But once you choose, you got to live with the consequences of your choice. God lets us decide about our focus. God lets us decide about our faith. Number three, God lets us decide about our faithfulness. Look in verse 8. Therefore shall ye keep all the commandments which I command you this day, that ye may be strong and go in and possess a land, whether you go in to possess it. He says, I want you to listen to me to where I can help you, to where I can give you strength, to where you can go in and possess the land that I have promised you. But he's saying the whole focus is, it's your choice. It's up to you. Your fathers had a choice. They chose not to go in, and they suffered the consequences of their choice. They decided to disobey, to reject, to not believe, and they suffered for 40 years of wandering. They had a choice. They made the wrong choice. They suffered the consequences. And he says, you have the same choice now. Whether to be faithful and trust me and obey me, to trust self or the Savior, he says, you've got a choice. I ain't going to make you obey me. So if you'll surrender, if you'll yield, that's the thing, yielding to God. The fact that God doesn't have strings attached to us, does that mean that God has no influence or no control? No, the thing is, we yield to him. Willingly say, Lord, you control me. Willingly say, Lord, you be Lord of my life. Lord, you do what you want me to do. I yield to you. You don't have to force me. You don't have to make me. You don't have to break my back. I yield to you. That's why Paul said, Romans 6:13, neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness, the curse, unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God. He said, you've got a choice. You can yield yourself to your flesh. You'll suffer the consequences, or you can yield yourself to the Lord and to his work. Job 4:8 says, they that plow iniquity shall sow wickedness, reap the same. I'm saying we've got a choice. We can say, Lord, I'm yours, here I am, I'm going to be faithful to you, or we can say, I'm going to live my way, do what I want to do, and we'll suffer the consequences. But the Bible's very clear, we reap what we sow. It says there, if we plow wickedness, we will reap the same. Galatians 6:8, for he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Proverbs 22 verse 8 says, he that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity. He that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity. That vanity means nothingness. I always think about cotton candy. You get it, and by the time you taste it, it's gone. And that's what the writer of Proverbs says. Sowing to iniquity, wanting to find pleasure in this world, sowing to sin, sowing to flesh, leaves you empty. It looks so good, and for a moment, for a few little moments, there's pleasure. That cotton candy has a burst of flavor, then it's gone. And he says, that's what happens when you choose iniquity and choose not to be faithful to the Lord. You'll end up empty. You'll end up dead inside. You'll end up dissatisfied. You'll end up disappointed. You'll end up in misery. He says, I give you a choice, either blessing or a curse. My way or your way? Well, let's move on. Verse 8, God lets us decide about our finances, our focus, our faith, our faithfulness, but also about our finances. Look in verse 8 and see what it says. Therefore shall ye keep all the commandments of the which I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land. Go in and possess the land. Well, in that day, if you was a victor over people or a providence or a city or a community, you went in, you got the goods. You got to keep the stuff. You got to keep the spoils. So when they go into the promised land and they win the victory, they don't just win a trophy to put on the wall or a crown to put on their head. They get the stuff in the promised land. And I thought about this. God was interested with what they did with the stuff they got once they got into the promised land. So I say like this, He gives us a choice. He lets us decide about our finances. He said, you want a blessing? Do it my way. Don't do it your way. Don't set your goals. Don't try to figure it out. Don't analyze everything. Now, there's nothing really wrong with the financial helps of today. But if that is our focus, because we want more money or buy more stuff that we don't need and don't really get pleasure from, we are missing the boat. He says, you decide, I'm going to give you so much finances in your life, and I'm going to let you choose what you do with it. To begin with, tithing and offering surely is the first. But even then, the 100% is not just the 10%. It's the 100%. What do we do with what God has given us? It doesn't matter. He says, if you want to be blessed, you got to do it my way. And if you don't want a blessing, do it your way. You won't get a blessing. There's a blessing and a curse. Another thing. God lets us decide about focus and faith and faithfulness and finances. He also lets us decide about our family. Look in verse 19. Ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house, and upon thy gates. He said, these words that I have spoken to you are not just for you, Papa, Mama, Grandma, Grandpa. These words are for you, but there are words that you're supposed to give to your family. You have a choice of how you're going to live for your family in this world. God has a way is spoken of in the Bible. There are certain elements that will be true of any family that's blessed. And if we don't follow those elements, those standards, those rules, those guidelines, we will not be blessed. A blessed family doesn't automatically happen. It doesn't just drop in our lap. It comes from prayer, work, devotion, dedication, loving God, loving each other, being patient, being obedient. He said, I'm going to let you decide. You want a blessed family? Do it my way. You want a cursed family? Do it your way. Go ahead. But it won't work. I want to move on. God lets us decide about our focus, our faith, our faithfulness, our finances, our family. He lets us decide about our friends. I counted through, and the word you or your is found 34 times in this chapter. Well, he is saying to the crowd, I'm talking to you individually, but I'm talking to you as a group. Which means, George, you ain't the only one in the family. Susie, you're not the only one I'm talking to. Uncle Bill, you ain't the only one in the group. We are a group. We are a proud. We are more than one. And God lets us decide about the kind of friends we have. We get the responsibility, the right, the privilege, however you want to look at it, of choosing our friends. But like when we jump off that roof, once we choose, we are servants to the results of our choices. We need to realize how much influence our friends, our acquaintances can be on us. We need to realize they will take us up or take us down if we allow it. Proverbs 13:20 says, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed," which means to suffer harm. If you want to be wise, hang around wise people. You want to be spiritual, hang around spiritual people. You want to be dumb, hang around dumb people. You want to be a fool, as the Bible says right there, hang around foolish people. God says, I'll let you have some friends, and I'll let you choose your friends. But if you want a blessing, do it my way. Choose godly friends. By the way, not only choose godly friends, but be godly friends. Be a godly friend, or you can influence somebody else. He lets us choose our friends, and he lets us choose how we treat others, the kind of friend we are. Luke 6:31. "And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise." He says, you want a blessing in your friendships? You want a blessing with those you associate with? You treat them like you would want them to treat you. You love them. You be patient with them. You be there when they need you. Understand their faults and failures. Love them in spite of how dumb they are sometimes. I read this and I thought I'd copy it down. Those that create trouble for others only prepare trouble for themselves. I like that. Those that create trouble for others only prepare trouble for themselves. You know what that's saying? It's saying this: you got a choice. You want a blessing in your friendships. Now, is that saying if you're always a good friend and always choose right friends, you're never going to have a disagreement? Of course not. This doesn't wipe away the fact that we're in life. This doesn't wipe away the fact that we're in a broken down world and broken down bodies with really ruined natures. But he says, if you want the best this world has to offer as far as friendship, do it my way. Do it my way. And if you want hurt and harm and you want to hurt and harm, do it your way. You get to choose blessing or curse. Look in verse 23. It says, "Then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, and ye shall possess," listen, ye shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. He says, if you will follow me and obey me, if you'll trust me, you will go into battle against nations bigger than you and against soldiers mightier than you, and you'll win. So I say this: God lets us decide about our focus and faith and faithfulness and finances and friend, family and friends, but he also lets us decide about our foe. This that God is talking to them about, this as I'm talking about to you this morning and to myself, is not erasing every problem we got. Take away every enemy, every battle, every tough spot, every bump in the road. He is not saying that by promising a blessing. He is just saying, you want the best you can get in this world? Do you want the best that's available in this world? I'll tell you how to do it. Do it my way. And if you want your way, you'll suffer the consequences. He lets us decide about our foe. We will not win without a battle. And he says you'll win against a foe that's mightier than you. I don't know if you've thought about it lately, but our enemy, the devil, is stronger than us and smarter than us. And he's got more energy than us. And he's more driven than us. He's got more stamina than us. He's more dedicated than us. He is a mightier enemy than we are ourselves. And we can say, well, that's just it. I just give up. I'm defeated. Or we can say, I'm going to trust God. We get a choice. We can say, I know the devil's strong, but he ain't stronger than my God. I know the devil's angry, but he ain't angrier than God's will for my life. I know the devil won't stop, but neither will my Lord. God has given me grace to face the battle, the enemy. And we can let the devil keep us defeated and go on in misery. Or we can say, God, I trust you, even against the enemy and all that he's doing. It's a blessing or a curse, and God says, you choose. You choose. Look at verse 16. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and that you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. He said, be careful. Take heed to yourself, that you don't let yourself be deceived, and you do something dumb like turning away from me. So I thought about this. God lets us decide about our failure. He said, if you want to fail, go ahead and do it your way. If you want to blow it, go ahead and do it your way. There is a curse there. You choose a blessing or a curse, and you do it your way, and you're going to fail. But then I thought about this. When we do fail, what are we going to do then? We will fail. We do not have to. God has given us grace where we don't have to. But we are human and we will. So what's going to happen when we fail? I tell you what we can do. We can make a choice between a blessing and a curse. The blessing is, Lord, I really messed up. I blew it. I am so sorry I said that, did that, didn't do that. I am so sorry I failed you. I didn't trust you. I didn't rely on your word. I let my flesh get the best of me. God, I am sorry. I ask you to forgive me. Lord, please restore to me the joy of your salvation. Lord, please take me. We can do like Peter did and weep bitterly back to the restoration of the Lord. Or we can do like Judas did. He just went out and hanged himself without really getting right. So when we fail, and we will, God lets us decide how to handle our failure. The fact that we failed, there's no doubt about that. But now what are we going to do since we have? We should say, Lord, as quick as he shows us, as soon as he shows us, Lord, I'm sorry. I want to get right with you. I want to get back on the road with you. I want to get back in your will. I want to be what you want me to be. There is no penitence stage for Christians. There is no purgatory, which means you got to suffer for a little while until you get things paid for, and then everything's going to be all right. There is no purgatory after this life, and there's no purgatory during this life. There is no time of penitence where we got to be sad for a little while because we failed God. Now, failing God ought to make us sad. And when we fail God, it ought to rip our heart out and ought to break us and burden us. But we also should say, Lord, you died for me that I could get forgiveness. You don't want me wallowing around for a week, sad because I failed. You want me to run to you as quick as I can and in repentance and genuine repentance confess to you and get right and accept your forgiveness. We have a choice. He says, you can decide. When you fail, stay miserable. You know what? A lot of times people quit church, get out of God's will completely because they failed God and didn't take the right choice and handle it right. They let the devil's guilt, the devil's misery get the best of them. Instead of getting right, they just quit God completely. Got a question. Is that smart? No. God says you want a blessing, you got to do it my way. You want to curse? Do it your way. Now, there may be some time when we fail God and people know about it that we have to prove ourselves to man. No doubt about that. Reestablish trust, reestablish a faithfulness, and live for the Lord faithfully and regularly for a while to prove to mankind that we really have gotten right, but not to God. And let me say this and I'll be done. God lets us choose. We are not puppets pulled by God's strings with no will, no right, no choice. He says, I'll let you choose. I'm sitting before you a choice, either good or bad. Curse or a blessing. Your way, my way. He lets us decide about our focus, our faith, our faithfulness, our finances, our family, our friends, our foe, our failure. And then in verse 21, I believe he lets us choose, lets us decide about our funeral. Look in verse 21. That your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children of the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as in the days of heaven upon earth. He said, I'll show you how to let your days be prolonged. In other words, he's saying, I won't have to kill you like I did your parents. I'm going to show you a way to live longer. I think God lets us decide about our funeral. Now, does that mean we can determine when we die? Of course not. Does that mean we can stop death? Of course not. But it does mean this. We can choose how we die. Does that mean the car won't hit me? No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about how we die spiritually. How we die as far as being right with God or not. He lets us decide about our funeral, how we live this world. It's amazing how a funeral somehow makes a rotten man a good man and a sorry woman a good lady. Somehow them dying just seems like it just said everything all of a sudden. Oh, he was a good man, a good heart. He'd give you shirt off his back. I mean, listen, and he was a scoundrel and rotten, drunk. And but I want to tell you one thing. That's not the way God looks at it. Here's what God says. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. He says, if you die not right, that's the way you're going to face me. If you die lost, you're going to stand before me lost. I'm not going to stand up and give you a good eulogy when you don't deserve it, says God. How you die is what you're going to be. And that's why Jesus said, ye will not come unto me that you might have life. He said to these people, I want to save you. I want to give you life, and you won't let me. Your choice is no. Your choice is my way instead of God's way. Just like Cain chose his way instead of God's way and paid the price. So God lets us choose, lets us decide about our funeral, if we'll die right or die wrong. This morning I want to ask you this. Are you right? I mean by that, first, are you saved? Do you know for sure you're saved? Your sin has been washed under the blood of Christ? You know at least that you would go to heaven if you died. If you don't know that, or if you know you wouldn't, now's the time to get it settled. Right now, God is saying, I am putting a choice before you. Either a cursing, go to hell, or a blessing, go to heaven. And you're the one that decides. You're standing on the edge of the building. Once you make that decision to go the wrong way, you don't back up. You don't undo the decision. You'll pay the consequences. And God says, I want you right with me. I want you to be mine. I want to forgive you and save you. But I want to say also to us that's saved. We can be saved, but are we right? I do not want to feel like I got to apologize. I'm going to anyway, I believe. When I stand before the Lord because of all the things that was in my life right before I left this world. Our decisions are our decisions. God lets us decide. The work he does on us, he will continue. So the bottom line is we submit to his work by making right choices, by submitting. Or we resist and reject that and suffer the consequences because he's going to keep coming. And he's going to keep working. And he's going to keep speaking. They decided, the fathers decided 40 years earlier to not go in. They did it their way, and they paid the consequences. We're not puppets. There's no choices in life, but our choices have consequences. Let's stand together.